Here is the president and managing general of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Brian Burke. You are either the smartest or luckiest man I know. Every time you come in here, your team has just won two or three or four in a row.
Hey, man, you booked this last week. Don't give me that garbage. I don't pay to
say
how
it's
we're playing.
Is what you're saying.
We managed to win games. We did. When did we book this?
Over a week ago.
Yeah, so.
Well, so it's luck.
Don't come on when we're riding a wave.
Okay.
A wave.
Go to Vegas then, because you're on a streak right now. I know you. There's a bunch of places we could start.
Yeah.
Let me start
one
at one.
Jumped into my BlackBerry. We want to ask him about. So we'll blindside him with that one though.
As you are well aware, your organization, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, was sold. Now it's not. The deal's not completed. It probably won't get vetted until June or July, I'm told. But there is an opening for a president with the departure of Mr. Petty. Are you a candidate?
No.
Are you a candidate because you don't want to be a candidate?
Correct.
Why don't you want to be a candidate?
I have a job.
I understand that. We all have jobs, but there are better jobs out there, Burke.
Why is this a better? Why
well, I don't know if it
job?
Is or it isn't. You don't think it's a better job?
Well, it's not the job I like. The juice in this job is making trades and winning hockey games and watching you transform something. Team president is very different. You know, president, and I've been a team president. I am here, which is kind of fraudulent, the title I have here, because the business operation is run by an internal group that are outstanding. But I have been a team president where I have run the business and enjoy that side of it. I think I'm good at that side of it. There's no juice in that job like there is being a GM.
So it's the GM job that interests you rather than the presidency.
Correct.
I mean, you like the title.
Well, the title gives you cachet when you deal with business people. In other words,
I understand.
There's great value. Pat Quinn is the one who taught me that years ago. He said, get every title I'll give you, because then when you go to do a sponsorship deal with a bank or whatever, you're not just the GM.
Well, then there's one less person who can fire you, too.
We have owners.
Well, I get that. But still, you need as many friends as you can above you on the pay scale.
I got to tell you candidly, this is the difference between you and me, maybe, or the businesses, but I have never thought of it that way once. I always felt I could get fired if I didn't do the job, and titles wouldn't insulate me from that.
So when you took when you came to Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, did they offer you the presidency, or did you ask for the presidency?
It was offered.
Would you have taken it if it wasn't offered, do you think?
I probably would have.
You would have?
Yeah, but not for that thinking. My thinking is, you stand up in front of a group and say it's a charity event. You're introduced as a president and GM. Well, the people who don't know, they think, wow, he's president and GM. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And if you're dealing in the corporate community and you're dealing with the president of a bank and you're trying to help the sponsorship guys close a big deal, it does help if you have the title.
I get it.
Put some weight, you know? It's like...
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I think you found in this city, I don't think there's been a general manager, maybe Cliff, when he was, who was as involved in as many things in this city. You've really kind of tried to do as many things as you can.
I love it here. I love the city. I always have. I always, when my teams played here, we come here with Vancouver, Anaheim, or you know, whatever team. When I worked at the league, there's an aura about Toronto, and it's the center of the hockey universe. I know we're going to get all kinds of emails and but it is. It's a great city, and I feel very privileged and fortunate to live here. So, yeah, I've tried to be active in the community. That's part of, you know, one of the things I've always done. Wherever I've worked, I've tried to make a difference. So that's not going to change regardless of wherever I go or live. But here in Toronto, it's special. Like I was asked yesterday, what's the best part about being the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Mm-hmm.
I said living in Toronto. It's a fantastic city.
Now, you've hired a bunch of high-quality hockey guys, and a lot. I mean, the latest being Rick Dudley. Did you do that in your own mind? Because when Bob was talking about president, everybody eventually says, I'm going to move up and let somebody else do that. Did you do that at all, or have you done that at all with succession in your mind, that someday one of these guys will take over from me and I'll do something a little differently?
No. Now, to be fair, they're all guys that I think by the time I'm done, I have no intention of giving this up until I get canned. They're going to carry me out with my boots on. So I'm going to stay with it for as long as I'm doing the job, and whoever employs me at that time thinks I'm doing the job. And then I'd like to do something else for the Toronto Maple Leafs and stay on in some capacity. All of these guys are guys that could be GMs. Dave Nonis in particular has been a GM and would be, you know, was a candidate for every job that's been open since he came here. But we have put him contractually in a situation where he's not free to walk. The other guys have windows and can leave in certain times. And I have no doubt that we're going to lose Dave Poulin someday if we don't give him the proper title here. And I have no doubt that we'll lose Claude Lizelle and Rick Dudley. That's, I have no problem bringing in people, giving them the right opportunity, and then watching them walk out the door, because then you have an ally for life with that team. So if Claude Lizelle hits a roadblock here and goes to be the assistant general manager, say, he goes from the four hole, which he's in now, to the two hole with the Washington Capitals, we have an ally for life with that team. That's a team we can make deals with, we can converse with, we get information from. So there's value. If, you know, like, I've developed a bunch of young guys that have gone out and done well, and I'm proud of that. And
so some team fires their GM tomorrow, and they come to you and say, we want to talk to Dave Nonis. You say no.
No, the Toronto Maple Leafs are paying good dough for the right to say no to that. Dave Nonis is paid at a very different level than a lot of other number two guys, for like Jim Nill with Detroit, for the right for us to say, no, you're not going anywhere. And by the way, what you just asked me has happened twice.
Mm. Really?
Yep.
And that
this season?
No, twice since Dave Nonis signed on with us. This guy is a top shelf guy. He will get his turn again, but in the meantime, he likes some stability. His son's at a prep school in New England.
Yep.
He gets to live in New Hampshire and come here and work, and he's got a great personal family setup, and I think he's very content.
What's the extent of that window of exclusivity? Does it open and close as it would with a player, say, in free agency? Is there a window during the summertime where
Dave Nonis?
Yeah.
No, he has no window.
So
the other guys have a window in the summertime.
Right. So to the extent of until his contract expires.
Yep.
He can't go anywhere.
Correct.
Is this organization top heavy?
How can you be top heavy?
Well, by comparison to other organizations.
Well, you're in a hard cap system. You can't spend more on players. The only place you can use your financial clout is front office and scouting, and we've done that.
So you have, there's a perception of Brian Burke that Brian Burke is not necessarily a consensus builder, and that he doesn't suffer fools lightly, and that he is the decision maker. And yet you surround yourself with people who are of high caliber, well-respected, who are used to have, all but one of them, I guess, has had his own job, which defies the logic. So therefore, are you, in fact, a guy who leans heavily on their opinions and effectively chairs a board meeting
to gain
a consensus?
You try to gain a consensus. Where you make the money in this job is if there's no consensus. It's easy when you got five guys around the table
who all agree.
And Rick Dudley, who's a great judge of talent, says, we should do this deal. And if everyone says we should do this deal, then it's a no-brainer. I pick up the phone. Where you earn your dough is where the staff is split. Now you got to make the call.
Right.
But no, I'm a consensus guy. I hire smart people. I leave them alone. I leave our coach alone. I mean, you ask Ron Wilson. I think I talked to him. Other than going down to talk to him about replacing assistant coaches, I think I talked to him twice between the draft and the start of the season.
Two more times than me. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so, like, yeah, people ask me all the time on a game day, who's starting the net?
Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I said, you know who's going to start in net? The guy that comes out of the runway first. That's who's going to start in net.
Well, I mean, and now we've talked about the guys you have, and now you have a hockey team that's won four games in a row. You're in a playoff position, looking, I think, probably as good as the team has looked all year. Would you be reluctant to break this team up? Are you at the point now where you would say, this is what we've got? I believe in this team. We're going with this.
No. I'm not paid to get in the playoffs. I want to win a championship here. Getting in the playoffs, we could have done that last year. We could have traded our young players and gotten in last year for a couple of 30-year-olds. We could have gotten in the year before, too, I believe, if we traded all the kids. If you look at what's happened here, it's not just that we're in a playoff position today. We've been in a playoff position almost all year from the start of the season.
True.
We've only been out for a week or 10 days. I don't know the stats, but this is no fluke. You go back to All-Star. This group, I think, has enough to do it. Would I improve the group if I could, even if it meant taking someone out of the group? Absolutely. I'm not interested in making the playoffs and getting their asses kicked in the first round. I've done that. It's not much fun. I'm interested in getting in with a realistic, reasonable chance to win or bloody somebody's nose doing it, and use that round or two rounds or whatever we can do as a building block for a championship team.
Okay, so but I would say then that there is no evidence as yet that this team, as currently constructed, isn't the kind of team that could very well get their butt handed to them in the first round.
Correct.
So therefore, there's work to be done.
Correct. What I just told him.
But I mean, so just to back up though, I mean, are you saying that this team wouldn't be able to win a round?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is if I can add something to it that increases the likelihood they can win a round, I would not bet against this group in a playoff series. I think we're a little small up front. We don't have much playoff experience, but the way this team works and sticks together and makes things happen, I would not for a second, if the playoffs started tomorrow, bet against this group. That's not the question I was asked. I was asked is, am I done making deals? And my answer is no. If I can improve this team tomorrow, I'm going to make a deal tomorrow that improves it.
Well, and you say tomorrow, your MO has been to make your moves well in advance of the trade deadline, which I think is February 27th, I think. Anyways, at the end of February, do you think there's more of a likelihood that something happens sooner if it's going to happen at all?
I don't know. You're right. My pattern is make those deals in January. I'm a January guy. I think the deadline is where we make, so as a group, I'm including myself, we make more mistakes at the deadline and on July 1st than we do the whole rest of the year. And to me, you get the math doesn't work at the deadline. There's 20 teams that are still, or 22 or 23 or 24 that are mathematically alive, and they're all buying. They're all adding.
Yeah.
And there's only one parade. Only one team has a parade, and they all make expensive purchases. They all overpay at the deadline. I try to do it, set the price, what we think is fair, and do something in January, and then let the team play together through the deadline. I have never been a big deadline guy.
So here's the dilemma. Up until now, you had to dismantle and build. And you're building foundation blocks to a great extent, because you start with ostensibly nothing. Now you have gone to a certain level. Are you now past looking for a kid who can help you down the road in the next 2 months? Does any acquisition you make now have to help this team immediately?
By and large, well, here, let me qualify that. They teach you in law school, if you're in court,
never ask a question you don't know the answer to.
No, they tell you if you don't know the answer, you say, Your Honor, it depends.
Oh.
So it depends. Would I, if I could get a kid that I really believe was going to be special, and it meant we gave up something off our team, but a guy that I think would be special, I always do that unless I thought we were going to have a parade. So I qualified a little bit. But in general, no, we are looking to add. Not futures. We're looking to add and get better now.
Do you have the ammunition to do something significant?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we have some kids. You look at the Marlies and how they're playing, and look at the kids in the system. I think we have depth. I think we have young assets. I do think there's room for age group asset trades. In other words, if you trade a 22-year-old and get back a 22-year-old who plays a different position, that's an age group asset trade. In other words, I'm not giving away any future. Now I'm making a bet on what it does for our team, but I'm not giving away any future. That's a possibility. So, I think you have right now, we don't have a third or a fourth round pick, if I'm not mistaken. We do have a first and a second. I think we traded the other second in the Coverley deal for John Michael Lyles, and so on. So are we going to keep those two picks? Yeah, we're going to try desperately to keep those two picks. We got Bradley Ross coming. We got Greg McKegg coming. We got Colburn in the system, on and on and on. D'Amigo. So, yes, I think we have the depth to make a deal.
You, as I think you've learned, first-round picks are politically explosive in this town. What happens to them? Would you trade a first-round pick now for a player who you think could make you a more dangerous playoff team?
Where's the phone? Absolutely.
You would?
Yep. At some point, Bob's question is the right one, but at some point, there's a critical mass you've put together, and you've got to add to it. The fans aren't stupid in Canada. The one thing they need to see is they need to see steel going up. They need to see a foundation. They need to see the building going up, and they can buy into the plan. And they can live with a gamble, too. They can live with, we'll play a first for a guy that might help us win around.
But at some point, you got enough foundation.
Exactly. And I think the answer to your question is, yeah, right now.
One of the pieces of that foundation, almost perhaps the most important piece, is the goaltender. You've got two. Most people went into the season, or a lot of people went into this season saying, what happens to Leafs is going to depend on what happens to James Reimer. That hasn't turned out to be the case. Now Jonas Gustafsson's got the net, and he doesn't look like he wants to give it back. But would you be interested at all in adding a veteran goaltender that you thought could make a difference?
No, not at this point. And I'll tell you why. You said most people said it would depend on James Reimer. That's only partially true. Everybody said it would depend on James Reimer.
Did you?
Yep. And so to me, I told Jonas this. We had a Christmas function at Roots at the store on Bloor Street, and the Roots people are wonderful. And I said to Jonas, I said, just so you know, no one's written this, but just so you know you saved our ass this season so far. I know that. And I said, your teammates know that. And no one's written it, but you have been the difference between a great start that crumbled into dust and hanging on to a playoff spot.
Did that surprise you that he was able to do that?
No, we never counted on Jonas to be the starter this year. When we signed him, we had high hopes, and we never counted on him to be the starter this year because of the year that James Reimer had had. But we never discounted. We never looked for another goalie. We always felt he's a guy that could be the backup goalie and chip in with quality starts and help us. And now he's, like you said, he's grabbed the net. Every goaltender in the Hall of Fame grabbed the net from somebody. That's how that position works. It's like being a relief pitcher. It's the only job, a relief pitcher and a goalie, the only job where you audition every night. You have a bad night, guess what? If you get shelled, the other guy might not only start the next game, he might finish the game you're in. Marty Brodeur got yanked last night. Mm-hmm. So this is the peculiar nature of the position, that now Jonas has grabbed the net, and now James, next time he gets a start, he's got to try and grab it back. It's a wonderful position to be in if you have two guys that can play.
The president and general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Brian Burke, is in studio. When we come back, at least a couple of topics. Dion Phaneuf and rats. This is Primetime on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius, and Sportsnet.